From KCPW in Salt Lake City, I'm Jennifer Napier-Pierce, and this is City Views. Play involves pleasure, recreation, and amusement. And the conventional wisdom is that play is for kids. But the scholar Thomas Goodale argues that there's a generation gap when it comes to play. Goodale says adults today consume a far greater share of the resources and opportunities for play, physical education, and health. He says there's been a lack of investment in recreation for kids when it comes to infrastructure and various aspects of the environment, and that future generations will pay the price. Today on the program, Thomas Goodale joins us to talk about social and economic justice for children. Plus, alt rockers The Devil Wail, the featured band on this month's Sounds from the Lounge. All that and your calls coming up after the news. Good morning. I'm Jennifer Napier-Pierce, and this is City Views. For decades, Thomas Goodale has been one of the top leisure experts in the country, exploring the historical, social, and theoretical underpinnings of free time. Now he says there is generational inequity when it comes to health and recreation. Thomas Goodale is coming to Utah this weekend to talk about the world we're leaving to our grandchildren. And today on the program, he joins us from the studios of WHRO in Williamsburg, Virginia. And Thomas Goodale, thanks very much for your time.
Good morning, Jennifer.
Thomas Goodale is a professor emeritus in the Department of Health, Sport, and Leisure Studies at George Mason University. He'll give a lecture called What Will Become of My Grandchildren at the symposium titled Speaking Up and Speaking Out, Working for Social and Environmental Justice Through Parks, Recreation, Tourism, and Leisure. That's happening this Thursday through Saturday. We'll give you more details on that as we go. Later on in the program, we switch gears and go to the local band The Devil Wail and their unique brand of alt-rock harmony. But first, the legacy we're leaving our kids. If you have questions or comments about this idea of generational inequity, give us a call. 801-355-TALK is our number. 801-355-8255. Or you can send email to cityviews@kcpw.org. Professor Goodale, as I mentioned, you've been an expert in leisure and recreation for years. You're now drawing attention to a generation gap in recreation between adults and kids. First, what got you thinking about this dichotomy?
I think the initial impetus was when Dr. Dustin, who's hosting the conference at the University of Utah, contacted me about doing a piece for a special edition for which he was the editor, and he wanted me to talk about this subject. And so I did, and it's not a subject that I deal with ordinarily, but it's one that's obviously a concern to me, as I think it would be to everybody, as a parent and as a grandparent. And of course, in this environment, everyone is worried about passing on our indebtedness to our children and the implications of that. But I'm afraid that there are things that are more immediate and potentially more problematic than the debt and the deficit. And that has to do with the world in which our children are growing up, which I think is frankly increasingly dysfunctional for them.
Well, when you say intergenerational inequity, what precisely are we talking about? What are those indicators that you have been looking at?
Well, I think, it's almost too numerous to mention, but I've been looking at what's been happening with what I consider the primary institutions in our culture, which include government, the private sector, businesses and corporations, families, communities, and the not-for-profit sector, and others are seeing it as well and have been writing about it for some time, and that is that all together these five institutions have not been able to cope with the kinds of problems that children, and particularly low-income children, experience in this country.
So the kinds of resources we're neglecting when it comes to kids, what are we doing wrong?
I think I think what we're doing wrong is primarily not paying sufficient attention to, or potentially, and to see that children have an honest opportunity to develop their potential as human beings. I don't think most children. The number of children that are living in poverty today is about 16 million. And I think most of them, for most of us, at least those of us who have been privileged not to have to deal with the welfare state, not to have to deal with the court system, not to have to deal with a number of things that occur in their lives, but they're out of sight and out of mind. They remain largely invisible to most of us. So it's either that, or more problematically, we don't care.
Do you think that's the case, that this is a lack of concern on our part as adults?
If we define concern as being ready to allocate sufficient resources to address the problems that they face, then I would say it's again back to either out of sight, out of mind, or maybe we don't care, much as we all proclaim to care, the resources are not available.
We're speaking with Professor Thomas Goodale. He's a professor emeritus in the Department of Health, Sport, and Leisure Studies at George Mason University. He'll be giving a lecture, What Will Become of My Grandchildren, at the symposium, Speaking Up and Speaking Out, that's Working for Social and Environmental Justice Through Parks, Recreation, Tourism, and Leisure. The symposium will be this Thursday, May 17th through Saturday, May 19th at the University of Utah, and Professor Goodale will be giving the Saturday afternoon lecture there. Well, it sounds like we're having a bit of technical issues. We will get those fixed right after a break. This is City Views on KCPW Salt Lake City. Welcome back. This is City Views. I'm Jennifer Napier-Pierce. Today on the program, Tom Goodale joins us to talk about the generation gap in opportunities for recreation and play. Goodale argues that adults today consume a far greater share of the resources and opportunities for physical education and health, and he is coming to Salt Lake City as part of a symposium at the University of Utah this weekend. We'll give you more details on that as we go. You can join the conversation if you like. Do you agree we are shortchanging our grandkids? Give us a call. 801-355-TALK is our number. 801-355-8255. We had a few dropouts there. Thomas Goodale is joining us by phone now, and are you there, sir?
I am here.
Okay, terrific. You say there is a growing body of evidence that health is very much tied to the equitable distribution of income. Expand on that, if you would.
I'm not an expert necessarily on this area, and this is relatively recent material. It goes back particularly to a book done by a couple of epidemiologists in Great Britain, and I want to get the title for you if I can. The title is The Spirit Level, Why Equality is Better for Everyone. You're disconnected?
No, we're here.
Oh.
Go right ahead.
Okay, I'm sorry. There's a book by, again, two epidemiologists in Great Britain, entitled The Spirit Level, Why Equality is Better for Everyone. Authors are Richard Wilkinson and Kate Pickett.
And what's their main thesis?
The main thesis is that in countries with the greatest inequality, we also experience the greatest number of both social problems and health problems, and that in those countries with the least income disparity, and equality, by the way, is very much an overstatement. We're talking more about equity and a smaller gap between the rich and the poor. But the indicators are that where the gap is the smallest, the social and health indicators are the most positive. And they have surveyed tons and tons of literature. I mean, it's an excellent book. It's been reviewed in various ways, but it is something that probably, if I were to recommend a book to anybody, that would probably be the one I would have them start with.
Now, you first addressed this.
Go ahead. There's also a spate of books that have come out only in the last 2 or 3 years. And another one that I would refer you to would be a book by Acemoglu, Darren, D-A-R-O-N, and Piketty, which is no relation and not spelled the same way as Kate Pickett. But those two researchers, one is in France, the other one is at Berkeley, those two researchers have published a number of articles about the consequences of wealth disparity. And in all cases, the consequences are not good. We have recently been introduced to the Gini Index, or the Gini Coefficient. I don't know if that's familiar to you, but it's G-I-N-I, named after an Italian statistician, it turns out. But the Gini Coefficient is a measure of the amount of mobility or the lack of mobility in a culture, and that's class mobility. And it's also intergenerational class mobility. And the conclusion is, and this is something that has become disturbing for everybody on the political spectrum, left or right, it's not a matter of income so much as it is a matter of disparity. And what we find out now, to, you know, to use a tired phrase, is that, in fact, America is no longer the land of opportunity. America ranks somewhere around 21st among the developed nations. The nations that turn out to be on top tend to be the Scandinavian countries, Norway, Denmark, Sweden, Finland, and many include Iceland. And when we look at international comparative data, those countries show up in the top 10 on virtually everything. The United States trends toward, in this case, 21st or thereabouts in our measures, and goes down from there. So if we look at international comparative data, and I do look at some of that, I cite 4 or 5 studies, the United States is not the country that we would like to believe that it is. The objective evidence just doesn't support that.
Thomas Goodale is a professor emeritus in the Department of Health, Sport, and Leisure Studies at George Mason University, and he'll be giving the lecture, What Will Become of My Grandchildren, at the symposium Speaking Up and Speaking Out, Working for Social and Environmental Justice Through Parks, Recreation, Tourism, and Leisure, happening this weekend at the University of Utah. And if you'd like to join us, 801-355-TALK is our number, 801-355-8255. Professor Goodale, you first addressed this topic in an article published back in 1990. Have you seen any improvement, or is the problem just getting worse?
You know, that's an excellent question, Jennifer, and I'm not sure that I can answer the question as posed, but I'm quite sure that it isn't getting better. You know, we just keep bumping up against very, very tenacious and difficult forces. One of the things that I mentioned, or plan to mention in my talk, is that 41 years ago, I was involved in a session with a colleague during which we said the programs that we are involved with in our universities are almost universally white. There are not enough black people in them. We lack visible minorities of almost every kind. And that was 41 years ago. We introduced a resolution to work hard to try to get additional numbers of minorities into our master's and doctorate programs. and incidentally, that resolution was approved by a vote of 28-17. I couldn't imagine 17 votes opposed, but that's the culture that we're in. At this session on Friday in Utah, at the symposium, there is a session devoted to increasing the number of minorities in our programs. That's 41 years.
How do you do that? How do you broaden it to appeal to all populations? I mean, to get more people to our parks, to provide more opportunities that appeal to a wide range of experiences and abilities.
Excuse me, Jennifer, I misunderstood what your question was initially. I was thinking about university programs because the symposium is entirely about people from other universities, but one of the sessions is about getting more minorities into our university programs so that they become faculty, they become models, they become mentors, they become recruiters to help us bring along that community.
I see.
We have the same problem, of course, with other kinds of park and recreation facilities. I can give you an example from my recent experience. In a county which has a very significant black population, there is a new county park that has been built, and there are 4 tennis courts and no basketball courts.
And so you see that infrastructure oversight as biased in some ways.
I'm only saying that there are more opportunities for non-minorities.
Again, speaking with Professor Thomas Goodale, he'll be speaking at the University of Utah, talking about a generation gap in opportunities for recreation in the United States. If you'd like to join us, 801-355-TALK is our number. So what about this idea of the trickle-down theory? You say that children, we're not meeting the needs of children right now. You know, if we take care of adults, they'll ensure that children are getting the resources that they need, right?
So long as we have the kind of circumstances that we have now. For example, one of the reasons why there are so many single-parent minority households is that there is almost no work for black males aged 18 to whatever. Those jobs have just disappeared. More so for that group who may have completed high school, who may have completed a year or two of college, but their jobs, opportunities for them are drying up, and there's kind of a perverse consequence of some of what we're doing now in terms of college and university education. And that is, we have thousands upon thousands of young people who have degrees but don't have jobs. And one consequence of them for people who have only a high school degree or maybe a high school equivalency, a GED, or who are at the lower end of the education spectrum, perfectly well qualified to do a lot of the work that's available, but can't compete with students who now have college and university degrees. So what's happening is it's being depressed even more than it has been in the past. And so it's very, very, very difficult in some communities to be able to develop the resources as a family, whereas you might be able to develop the resources as a community, but the burden falls on basically all of us, because when we talk about the government, that's us. It's not them. And we have an us and them kind of a mentality. And with the polemics that we're now experiencing, which is paralyzing governments at all levels, those polemics are just making it impossible to move in any direction.
Your lecture on Saturday is titled, What Will Become of My Grandchildren? So I'm wondering, you know, what kind of consequences you foresee? What does the future look like if we stay on the current trajectory?
Well, it's you know, in my view, it's obviously not pretty. I think if we don't change directions, and I think there are a number of things that are going to happen this year, you know, the next 6 or 8 months, I think is going to be quite telling. But unless things change, then I see things simply deteriorating at the rate that they have been deteriorating now for the past little while. And I think ultimately what that means, and we do not want to face this question, but what that means is, how do we distribute resources sufficient so that people in this country don't starve to death? And that's the one we're facing.
So I guess the question is, what can be done? Is this a problem that can be solved, you know, individual by individual? Or does the solution really require a larger scale systemic change? And what does that change look like?
I think it requires a larger scale systemic change. And I don't know what that looks like, except that a couple of the authors, many of the authors, the two books that I mentioned, by Acemoglu and Richardson, which is entitled, by the way, Why Nations Fail, their book and the book by Kate Pickett and Richardson, Richard Wilkinson, they're saying that it's going to be dramatic. It doesn't have to be wrenching. And I think the question is, how wrenching will it be? And I think all of us are very much interested in it not being wrenching at all. But it's going to require change at the highest levels. And when that starts from below, then it's kind of the civil rights movement writ large. I think this is even bigger and perhaps more difficult and potentially more traumatic. But it has to be done.
Some of the arguments you're making sound very familiar to the economic justice arguments we hear coming out of the Occupy movements. And yet you say it can't be a grassroots, you know, from the bottom up. It needs to be a top-down kind of...
I think it can only now probably come about from the bottom up. But I don't think the 99%ers are going to be able to do it unless they get very well organized and have a number of allies that join them, because ultimately that's how civil rights came about. I mean, the civil rights legislation came about because Lyndon Johnson knew how to work Congress and get things done. We don't have that now, and nobody foresees it over the next few years. We have polemics, and we see that continuing for a while. If we can overcome that, we might be able to make some progress. But right now, it doesn't look like we're going to be able to overcome that in the near term. So if something is going to happen in the near term, then it's probably going to be a mass movement, and it will require the kind of organization and the kind of leadership that Martin Luther King brought to civil rights in the 1960s.
Thomas Goodale, he's a professor emeritus in the Department of Health, Sport, and Leisure Studies at George Mason University. He will be giving the lecture called What Will Become of My Grandchildren at the symposium Speaking Up and Speaking Out, Working for Social and Environmental Justice Through Parks, Recreation, Tourism, and Leisure. The symposium will be Thursday, May 17th through Saturday, May 19th in the Guest House and Ballroom at the University of Utah. And there's more information on our website. Professor Goodale will be giving the afternoon address on Saturday. And Thomas Goodale, thanks very much for your time today. I appreciate it.
Jennifer, thank you.
Coming up next, we're switching gears, going to local music, The Devil Whale. But first, a break. This is City Views on KCPW Salt Lake City. Welcome back. This is City Views. I'm Jennifer Napier-Pierce. The Devil Whale has been described as having a SoCal alt-rock vibe with folk elements and gorgeous harmonies. They played over 100 shows in 26 states last year, but when they're not on the road, they're home here in Salt Lake City, writing and recording songs. The Devil Whale is this month's featured band on our online music series, Sounds from the Lounge. Today on the program, we have three of the band members with us, and joining me in studio is Brenton Jones. He is a songwriter and guitarist with The Devil Whale. And Brenton, good morning.
Good morning, Jake.
Oh, wrong mic. There we go.
Good morning.
Good morning. Jake Fish is with us as well. He plays bass. Jake, hi.
Hey there.
And Jimmy Tim, he's lead guitarist. And Jamie, welcome.
You can call me anything you want. That's okay.
And you can see two video clips from The Devil Whale playing in our member lounge on our website, kcpw.org. If you've got questions or comments about their music or what life on the road is like, you can give us a call. 801-355-TALK is our number, 801-355-8255, or you can send email to cityviews@kcpw.org. Jamie, sorry about that.
Oh, so it's fine.
Speaking of names, what's in a name? Where does the name come from, The Devil Whale, Brenton Jones?
It was just a name of a picture in this magazine years ago before the band was formed. And when we formed, we needed a name. Just kind of wouldn't have been much different if we pulled it out of a hat. So it was the hard part was just finding something we liked okay. So at that point, we didn't really care what it meant.
And now you're still happy with
it? Yes. Well, yeah. You just get used to it, I guess. It's like when you're a kid, you don't like your name sometimes, and then you grow up and you're like, oh, it's my name.
You guys used to be called Palomino.
Yeah. Well, Jake and I played in a band called Palomino. Yeah, and then kind of gradually switched. Shifted over to The Devil Whale. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And you guys have been playing as The Devil Whale for about 5 years now. Brenton, I understand you write all the songs.
Yeah,
you play guitar.
It's shifting a little bit more. We're starting to do a lot more collaborative stuff. Jamie's been in the band Jamie didn't really join the band until we started touring a ton. So this has been our first prolonged break, you know, since about November. So it was the first time we've actually had time off together. So we're starting to do a lot more collaborative writing.
And how is that? How is that different from just writing by yourself?
Well, it's good because you have more minds bringing, you know, to the table. Everybody's good at different things. So when everybody's chipping in equally, you're capable of going in a lot of different directions.
Jamie, you've been a guitar player for a long time. What got you started writing songs?
Oh, man. I used to write songs because it was too hard for me to figure out the songs I was listening to. So I'd be 13 years old, you know, figuring
what
out
what were those
some
songs about that you were writing?
Oh, man. They sounded a lot like 50s Elvis, Sun Session, Elvis era.
But they were about Dungeons & Dragons.
Dungeons & Dragons, maybe some, I had to say girls too. I mean, I was in junior high, but. So I started writing because, I don't know, it was always easier to write my own songs and play guitar. But I'd rather do my speaking with the guitar. But wow. I love writing, though. Everybody, that's the thing is we each kind of have, like Brenton said, certain things that we're better at, and we have different influences, and we all kind of throw together ideas, and then it all usually turns out better.
So what are your influences besides Dungeons and Dragons and girls?
Do you need any more influences for rock and roll?
What about your musical influences? Jake, what about you?
My musical influences?
Yeah.
I like the Beatles a lot, Dylan, kind of old 60s, 70s rock and folk. And then a lot of new indie kind of bands, indie pop bands and stuff like that. Dr. Dog, different projects like that.
We all
pretty much anything really. Old country. I like everything.
I think anything from probably the 50s up to now, we could probably find something we like.
Uh-huh. Brenton's same for you? Influences?
Yeah. Yeah, really is. Like I think our common ground between the four of us tends to be a lot of the older stuff. And then, you know, what we each like personally will vary a lot from there. So, but, yeah.
Okay. Well, you've released a third album, a second album, Teeth, last year. I want to play a clip that you recorded here in the KCPW Member Lounge. This is Golden. Set up this piece for us, if you would. Someone. Brenton.
Yeah. Actually, it's funny. I wrote this song. Will Sartain, local legend, was him and I were going to go for a walk one day for some reason, and he was running about 10 minutes late. And so I was like, oh, I got 10 minutes. And so I sat down and picked up the guitar just to kind of mess around, and then just kind of stumbled upon the guitar melody that leads into the chorus. And then from there, you know, by the time he showed up, I had a bit of a structure in place, and then worked on it when we got home. And that's the song. So that's Golden.
Okay. This is Golden from The Devil Whale.
Catapult was ready for another chance at civil war. Your eyes were so golden, and I marched right off of the ledge you made and landed in a velvet grave. I thought I heard someone say a prayer, and the words felt stolen. Crying out loud, get it right. Your love's just a ghost in the night. Close your eyes and it disappears. Close your eyes and it disappears. Close your eyes and
that's The Devil Whale playing the song Golden in the KCPW Member Lounge as part of our online music series, Sounds from the Lounge. Guys, I'm watching you listen to this, and it's kind of fun. You're gesturing, you're moving. you can't keep still. What's it like? How does the live recording compare to a studio recording for you?
I think it.
Jake.
I have a blast with the live recordings because normally you're pretty nitpicky in the studio and stuff like that. So I like to hear like mistakes and different things that we do just a touch different every time.
What are the mistakes there that you heard?
Well, it wasn't necessarily mistakes. We kind of, since it was a little more mellow of a session, I think we just did that like right before we showed up too.
So I kind of
forgot what parts we left in and left out.
Jamie, Tim?
The songs will sound just a lot different every time you play it. You know, when we play a radio show, you kind of have to arrange the songs differently because you're playing at a, you know, quieter volume and things like that. So it's always really interesting to hear it afterwards. It's really different than the studio. You know, I try to make it sound like it did in the studio on the stage or live, but it's kind of impossible. So it's fun to hear different versions of songs. And
had you heard this version that you've played?
Yeah, I love it. I love what you guys did. So far, the two songs we've seen, or that I've seen, sound and look great. So thanks.
Talk about the harmony part of it. I mean, when that second voice comes in.
Well, that's just Jake Fish.
It's just lovely. And
yes.
How do you guys pull it together, decide what that harmony should sound like, feel like singing together?
Yeah, it's actually probably Brenton and I both work on those. Like, I'll throw something out and there'll be a note or two that he's like, what if you do this instead or something like that. I guess it depends on the one. Sometimes
a lot of times
I get it right.
Recording too, we'll get, as we're recording something, we'll be like, oh, I could use something, you know, I could use a harmony here or there and come up with a, you know, a part. But usually it feels, try to put them where they feel natural, I think. Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of time to work on harmonies when you're spend 6 months in a van. Out of a year, these guys will be up front singing, okay, let's work on this part, and you can hear them.
I want to talk about that in just a minute. We're speaking with Jamie Timm, lead guitarist, Jake Fish on bass, and Brenton Jones, guitarist and songwriter and singer with the band The Devil Whale. And The Devil Whale will open for Neon Trees on Friday, June 8th at the Depot here in Salt Lake City. They'll also be playing at the Utah Arts Festival Sunday, June 24th. And again, you can see some choice videos on our website, kcpw.org. Gentlemen, you've been touring nationally for a couple of years now. You've spent a lot of time on the road this past year, 100 shows in 26 states. First of all, why go on the road? What's the allure there, Brenton?
Well, the allure is that I get a little cabin fever and I'm in one place for too long. So going through a spell like that currently, as we speak. So
itchy feet, huh?
Yeah, I mean, I really enjoy seeing the different places, meeting the different people, and it's been a really rich experience being able to do it. So we like doing it. I don't know if it's the smartest thing to do or if it's the most, you know, it drains our funds and
financially,
it ruins
yeah.
all of our equipment. But we like doing it, so we keep doing it.
So being able to play every night, I mean, that's a thing. For like, you put so much work into the music, and you want it to sound a certain way and all this stuff. And most of us, you know, we've been doing this stuff since we've been kids. And so being able to go on tour and do it in some regularity of, you know, every single night, have a show, man.
Well, the practice has got to be good, but those close quarters, Jake, I mean, do you still like these guys after 6 months in a bus?
Oh, yeah, yeah. We couldn't pick better dudes to tour with. I think after you cross, after you clear maybe like a month or two, you realize that you just don't want to talk to anybody else. After a while.
Yeah.
They're going to be the only ones that understand you.
If you ever, I
Jamie.
Watch, I'm going to get made fun of for saying this, because this is really, it sounds
Let's
cheesy,
hear it.
But, Deadliest Catch on the Discover Channel.
Run with this one, Jamie. Run with it.
I'm going to run with this. No, sometimes, obviously, we're a lot lazier than those guys, but being like on a boat or in closed quarters, sometimes you kind of get, I guess we're not on a boat, we're in a van, but similar thing.
What would you say our fish are? What's our catch?
Our fish, rock and roll, man. We're out there to get rich
we're
on
catching,
rock and roll.
We're providing it. We're not catching. We're catching it.
Yeah, we're catching. We're giving people sustenance
we're
with our music.
It. There
we're
you
catching
go.
It. And
you just get
it
paid $5 a day instead of thousands.
I think
thousands.
This metaphor has been exhausted. We're talking with the Devil Whale about their music, about touring. What's going on with the, as you go on these tours, how do you select sites? Has there been some bright points, some low points on the road, Brenton?
Yeah, definitely some of each. But usually if it's a tour we're booking ourselves, we just, you know, mostly you're playing places we've played before, but the first time around we'll just, really it's just like anything else, referrals, like asking other bands that have been through or other whatever, and you just kind of store the contacts away, use them when you need them. And then occasionally, we did a couple tours last year where we were just handed a tour, basically. You know, do you want these dates? And those are the best, because then it, you know, it's all set.
Jake, where's your favorite audience?
Well, I have to say Salt Lake City, but aside from that, probably like Seattle is a lot of fun. Actually, there are a lot of really cool places that we've been able to play and cool people we've been able to. I remember we played a show in Cleveland, Ohio, that everybody we talked to afterward was just unbelievably cool, and the show went really well. But that happens all the time. So, but I guess like we've only played Cleveland once, I think.
Yeah.
Right. So I.
So seeing those new audiences, just seeing how a new audience reacts is kind of fun.
Yeah, and you kind of get a sense for people of a certain setting too. Not to stereotype people in their environment, but like it seems like the Upper Midwest in particular, like everybody there. I don't know if it's just me getting along with them. Maybe, you know, maybe they're more like me or something like that. But I just think they're the friendliest and coolest people too.
Mm-hmm. Highlights for you, Jamie? Of the
oh,
tour?
Man. We've been so many places, but we had one particular show in D.C. at what was the venue?
930 Club
uh-huh. with the Head and the Heart. We were on a tour with Head and the Heart and Tao. We were opening up for them. And that show in particular, it was just a combination of everything with the crowd and the venue and location. And that's a big highlight for me. I also love going to Louisiana, though, whenever we get to go down there or Minnesota area is fun. I like up there. We've been all over. So.
You like this country. We're speaking with the Devil Whale. And again, they are the featured band this month on KCPW's website, our online music series called Sounds from the Lounge. I want to play another clip from, this is from your album called Teeth, which you released last year. This is a piece called So-Called War. Who would like to set this up for us? Story behind the song.
We probably had to have Brenton do it.
Okay. Brenton?
Well, this was the one we actually, in terms of the arrangement, we had never, when we were in the studio working on Teeth, we'd actually never played the song. In fact, I don't know if these guys had ever heard the song.
No. Yeah.
And we just kind of, one evening, just kind of sat down in a circle and worked on it together. And this is pretty close to what we came up, this is what we came up with.
Look for a Django Reinhardt influence on the guitar solo.
All right. This is So-Called War from the Devil Whale.
Silence all your intentions were good. Brand new homes where the enemy once stood. But revenge, it will eat you the way a lion.
Jamieton?
Yeah, it is. It's an influence there. He's a little flat fifths and sixth right there.
So-Called War by the Devil Whale. Lyrics, she's only famous because she slept with all my friends. Are these songs or are these stories, Brenton Jones?
I guess they're... Are they songs or stories? They're,
or both.
I guess they're songs. They're, not always... very consistent in terms of the voice of the narrator, so I'll kind of hop all over the place a little bit. It's not always a very cohesive, you know, all the lines don't always go together, but as long as they fit and sound okay, then I'll roll with it. But the newer stuff is different. That was just kind of this phase, I think.
It sounds good.
Thank you.
How did you guys find each other? Brenton, you said you've been playing with Jake forever, but how do you come together as a band and, you know, find a great guitarist like Jamie? I mean, how does that happen?
We all just kind of...
You all live here in Salt Lake?
Yeah. Yep. We all live within a few blocks of here. And we all just kind of met through mutual friends, common friends. And Jamie, you know, played with Band of Annuals for a long time, who were some of our really good friends. And when things slowed down for them, around that time, our guitar player quit. And it was kind of just a no-brainer. So we lucked out. Thanks, Band of Annuals. Rest in peace. We love you.
Yeah.
But, I mean, like, do you have to audition? How do you know that when something clicks, like, you guys could travel for 6 months in a band together?
I think musically, like, there's a big difference. Like, usually when you sit and practice with somebody, you can tell pretty quickly if it's going to work, you know. But then I think, honestly, we look for more somebody that has a personality that'll fit with us. But it's hard to find... To find different musicians who will stick with it, especially when, you know, people are willing to be along. But
sometimes when we're replacing people, we'll think of one of our friends or somebody we know, and we'll start being like, "Well, they could do it," before we've even heard them play, because we're always like, "Our parts are easy."
Yeah, and we're like, "We just want somebody we can hang out with.
As long as we find someone we like, we'll be fine."
Compatibility on the personality side. The Devil Whale made a second trip to South by Southwest this past March. What was that experience like? And is it somehow different from just your regular tour, Jake?
Yeah, absolutely. You're not in the van as much, and you're one of the cool things about our. I guess we played 5 shows when we were down there, so we're a little bit busy. But they give you these wristbands, and you can just go wherever you want and drink for free. It's awesome. So that's not like normal tour, and you get to see amazing, amazing artists, and it's kind of one of those things where normally we do everything together, and at that festival we all just meet up after a while. You know, everybody gets to go out and do their own thing, so it's kind of fun in that sense, I guess.
It's an overwhelming experience down there. There's thousands of people, and everybody looks exactly the same. You keep thinking, "Oh, is that so and so from Salt Lake?" And they're like, "No, like he just is dressed exactly like my friend." Yeah, it's tons of great music too.
So, have you? Was there someone that you discovered at South by Southwest who you thought, "Oh, they have a really unique sound"?
I think Pond. There's a band called Pond, Australia.
Yeah, I guess.
Awesome. Amazing.
I had never heard him before, and I saw him live. It blew my mind.
We got to play with a Taiwanese band on our showcase called Wanfu. I think these guys had to go move the van, so I was the only one that got to see him, but it was pretty eye-opening experience for me to see how they rock and roll over there.
I saw that the Little Willies is a band that's got Nora Jones in it, and this guy named Jim Campolongo, who's one of my biggest influences, one of my favorite players. I saw him play for the first time, and that was exciting.
So you do get to jam with other groups.
Well, mostly watching shows. Like, we're just running all over. I mean, it's all just in the downtown area, so you're just going from bar to bar to bar, like from, you know, noon to 2 a.m. So saw a lot of cool. Daniel Johnston, Built to Spill, The War on Drugs, saw a lot of great bands.
Our time is winding up. I want to play a third clip from a video you may not have seen. It just went up today.
Oh.
Nuclear Christmas.
Oh, this is a new one. Yeah.
Brenton Jones, tell us quickly about it.
Well, this is it's a song about the end of the world, basically, as the song implies. And I'm trying to think of how to set it up, but
it's radio debut.
That's, yeah, this
is the only recording that exists of this song. So.
Okay, well, let's take a listen. This is Nuclear played. Christmas by the Devil Whale. Maybe. Underground, it's
where we find our answers. It's where our lungs get blacker. All my favorite people.
Nuclear Christmas from the Sounds of the Lounge online music series from kcpw.org. That's The Devil Whale. And Brenton Jones, Jake Fish, and Jamie Tim, thanks so much for your time.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you.
And again, The Devil Whale will open for Neon Trees Friday, June 8th at the Depot here in Salt Lake City. They'll play at the Utah Arts Festival Sunday, June 24th. And of course, those videos will be up online all month at kcpw.org. City Views is a production of KCPW News in Salt Lake City. Thanks to Lauren Hendrickson. Our technical director is Jesse Ellis. Ryan Cron composed our theme music. And tomorrow, looking for stories and connection in an old school bus, Bus 52 comes to Salt Lake City, and we'll talk with them about their experience. For City Views, I'm Jennifer Napier-Pierce.